EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
Was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
Howdy, dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, man, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you've all had a great weekend. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. We start this episode with Stephen in the United Kingdom, and Stephen will be sharing his UFO experiences, some strange activity in Yosemite Park, and a paranormal encounter in France. And then we connect with Miriam in New York City, who witnessed with a colleague a large triangular craft that was dark grey in colour with a spectacular array of bright lights underneath while they were stuck in slow-moving traffic on 9th Avenue. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal, and if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Good evening, Stephen, and welcome to the podcast.
Good evening, Nick. Hi, thanks for having me on.
And thank you for coming on today, and you're calling from Surrey in the United Kingdom.
That's right. Yeah, sunny Surrey. It's very hot at the minute.
Sunny Surrey. Now, you have some experiences to share with us that occurred in 3 different countries. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, Stephen?
Yeah, I think the one that really sort of kicked everything off, going down the rabbit hole with everything, was Christmas Day evening 2009, around midnight. I was with my wife, who was pregnant at the time. So she was driving. We drove back from my in-laws, parked on the road, getting out the car, very quiet, as you'd imagine, after midnight on Christmas Day. I looked up in the sky. I'd say probably about 2,000 feet in height and distance, and probably about a mile away, I would say, were 3 orange orbs. So my first instinct was, oh, look, it's Chinese lanterns, but they were really solid in, and they weren't flickering, and they were moving far too quick and in an organized fashion to be Chinese lanterns. And then I pointed them out to my wife, who saw them, as you know, questioning what they were. And then from behind, 2 more orange orbs, like, kind of looked like they caught up with them, flew up behind them in a sort of formation, and then they just flew off into the horizon, same speed, and disappeared behind a tree line. I did actually film it, because I did have a video camera with me, But looking back at the footage, it was just, it just could have been anything on the footage. You know, it just didn't look good enough. I've still got that tape. I've no idea where it is. But yeah, that was really intriguing because obviously my wife was with me and she'd seen it, and we couldn't, I mean, we live fairly near Heathrow. So, you know, I do know what things flying around in the sky look like. And this was not an aeroplane of any description, and it certainly wasn't Chinese lanterns. So that was the first time I saw orange orbs. About 2 years later, 2011, it was the summer time, but I'm not, the date is a bit hazy on that, the month, but I got up in the middle of the night to go to the toilet, and we're right at the top floor, got a window looking right out over the rest of the houses, quite high up, about 100 metres this time in the sky, so really low, was a single orange orb, and it was on its own, flying quite slowly towards me, I'd say about sort of 30 miles an hour. And that one was really vivid. It was like a solid orange ball. It didn't emanate any light. It looked like the light was completely self-contained. And it's one of those, you know, the classic rub your eyes, have a look, wonder what was that? You know, what is that? It's probably the size of maybe a basketball, something like that. And it just came towards me, flew over the top of the house. I quickly ran downstairs and tried to look at it from the back, which I saw it for a little bit, and then it disappeared. That one I witnessed on my own, and that was really vivid. Out of all of them, that was the closest I'd seen them or seen it. And then the last of the orange orb sightings was New Year's Eve 2019. So I was with my wife, both my kids. I was in a place called Le Sable d'Olon, which is in the Vendée in France. We were staying in an apartment there. We went down to the beach to celebrate New Year's. So we took, you know, a bottle of wine. We sat on the sand. The kids were running up and down. There was no one around at all. And we were making our way back. It's a kind of like a very quiet, posh suburban sort of French area once you leave the beach and go up through the town. Nothing around, nobody around at all. And again, saw three orange orbs, pointed them out to the kids and my wife, and we were staring and wondering what they were. And then again, they're probably like 2,000 feet in the sky, about a mile away. And then as we're watching them, all the lights went out, all the street lights, all the house lights. There's a massive power cut, which lasted probably about a minute as they flew silently overhead. Then they disappeared behind some cloud cover and all the lights came back on. So I was quite glad that I'd witnessed two of these sightings with my wife, because otherwise people might wonder, you know, if you're making it up. But she's very kind of like, you know, logical brain on her. But you know, it kind of sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole with orange orbs, and I've since found out that it's quite a common sighting. I believe I've heard some on your podcast, other people have seen them as well. So yeah, that was three interesting sightings, that's for sure. Then there's one, this happened, this is the last of the kind of UFO style sightings. This happened in June, so really recent. It was midweek. I don't remember which day. I was the last to go to bed. Kids were in bed. My wife was upstairs reading. It was a really clear night, crystal clear sky, no clouds at all whatsoever. I'd gone out. I'd opened the back doors just to have a look at the sky, because it was, you could see pinpricks of light all over the sky. You could see all the stars. You know, I like a bit of star watching. I was looking out, and in the distance, I could see a plane flying. I thought, oh, this would be the perfect night to see something. If anything was going to appear, I wish it would appear, type thing. And then just as I was about to go back indoors, I looked up directly above my head. And in the entire sky, there was one single cloud, a small white cloud, which I thought, oh, that's odd, just sitting there. And then the cloud dissipated and an extremely bright white light appeared there, larger than a star. And it just flashed on and off, like, really quickly, then slowly, directly above me. It's very, very bright. And this must have gone on for about 20 seconds. Then the small cloud reappeared, covered the light, as it were. And then they both disappeared, the cloud and the light. That one did freak me out a little bit because more than anything, it kind of felt like I was being signaled or something. So that one, yeah, I remember thinking actually to myself, I think I even said it out loud, I closed the back doors and I said to myself that was something, you know, that really genuinely was something. I mean, like I said, I watched the sky, I'm interested in you know, observatories and things like that, and this wasn't a star. It was a fixed light, wasn't an aeroplane. So yeah, I have no idea what that was, but that was an interesting one. So I've got a few here, but I'll tell one that my dad told me first of all, and then one that my son told me. I saw my dad not that long ago, and I took notes. I said, "Oh, do you remember that ghost story you told me?" And he said, "Yeah," and he recounted it. So I took notes. So my dad was in the Air Training Corps in 1962. He was based in Catford, London, and their headquarters was a four-story Victorian house with large grounds. And the top floor of the house was the armory, and in that armory, obviously, it's pretty serious stuff: rifles, machine guns, ammunition, etc. And three of them, including my dad, three privates, were sent up to the top to sort the ammo boxes out. So they're all kneeling down, you know, moving the ammo boxes around. And one of the privates looks up. My dad remembers him looking up and turns to the doorway of the ammo room. And he just shouts, "What are you doing here?" You know, very seriously, because obviously you're in an army area full of weaponry. So they all turned. And my dad said, about 5 meters away, there was a very smartly dressed man in Victorian style dress with a hat, etc., just staring at them. So they all got up immediately, and the first private just like marched towards him and said, "You're not allowed in here. You need to get out." And as soon as they walked up to it, it turned the corner and vanished. So they were really shaken up. They were, you know, young men at the time. And they ran back downstairs and they found the commanding officer, who sort of told them, you know, calm down, listen to their story, made them a cup of tea, that kind of thing. My dad kind of thinks that potentially that commanding officer knows that other people had had experiences like that. So they searched the building, there was no one in it, and they locked up. But yeah, again, my dad is not one for making up stories on any level. So I always found that one quite intriguing. There's another story. This happened to my son. We always used to say, you know, did you, you know, ghost stories and whatever come up with the kids, you find it quite interesting. And he said, "Oh, I saw a ghost." He always used to say he saw a ghost of a black man. He said, "Oh, do you remember I used to tell you I saw a ghost of a black man?" So I thought, literally, I took it literally as a black man. So later on, I think I heard something on the podcast. I thought about shadow people. So I was like, "Oh, right, I'm going to ask him again. Now he's a bit older." I said, "Can you know, recount that story you told me again?" And I think he was about four or five. He was sleeping in our bed, which he loved to do for quite a long time. And he said he could hear us downstairs. We were still up downstairs. He could hear us talking. And in our room, if you're laying on the bed, you can see the banisters to the right leading up, obviously, into our room. We're right in the loft of the house, old loft, as a loft conversion. And he said he looked across and he saw a man looking through the banisters, holding onto the banisters and staring at him. And I said, oh, what does he look like? Black man. He said, no, he was just all black, completely black, like a shadow. And he was wearing a hat, I think, and like a long style sort of overcoat. That was it. He said it was literally just like a shadow. And then he said, as he looked at it, initially he thought it was me. And then as he... as he was staring at it, I think he actually said, Dad, as he was looking at the figure. And the figure just ran up the stairs and literally jumped, like it was going to jump onto the bed, and then just disappeared, like broke into, you know, millions of pieces and just disappeared. So it was, yeah, I've heard a few things about shadow people, etc. And it was only after I heard that and then he recounted that to me, I thought, okay, that's maybe what he saw. So that was quite an interesting one. A couple of things that happened to me, so obviously that's my dad and my son. I'd say this was really only, I mean, the real sort of classic sort of ghost sighting for me. I was in, this was summer 1998. So I was working in the music industry, as was my girlfriend at the time. She was French. She had a house, or her family had a house in the south of France near Biarritz. This house was her grandmother's old house. Now, this house was in the middle of nowhere. I think the nearest house was probably 5 miles away. There's a woodland like behind it. It's your classic sort of old French, you know, squat, haunted house type situation. A really nice house. Anyway, I remember like waking up. I just woke up and she was shaking me. She was saying, Stephen, look. And she was pointing to the corner of the room. And I turned over and I could just see the shadow of a white glowing figure, I should say, of an old lady, it looked like to me. And my girlfriend was just saying, oh, it's my grandmother. It's my grandmother. She was really freaked out by it all, obviously. And I kind of shocked myself, really, because I got straight up out of bed and walked towards it, because I was like, oh, what's this, you know? And I waved my hands through it, and as I'm waving my hands, it just sort of disappeared. And I was like opening the curtains, I was looking around. It really, you know, I couldn't work out what it was at all. I think thinking back, that was on the first night we stayed there. So you imagine every night after that, I'm sort of waking up in the middle of the night with one eye open, checking the corner of the room. But yeah, that was really interesting. That felt, yeah, quite a strange one. And yeah, I mean, I guess I mentioned, I'd gone summer, August 2014. We were in Los Angeles for a wedding and we were heading out after that to Yosemite Park, which I don't know if you've been to Yosemite. It's an amazing place. I absolutely loved it. And we stayed at a hotel called the Iwani Hotel. Really grand, old-looking hotel, really atmospheric, surrounded by all the granite mountains all around. Stunning. It's got a real vibe, though. There's something about it. Went into the hotel, really, really nice hotel. But, you know, there was something about it that I kept saying to my wife, this has, seems familiar, this place, you know. I think we were having dinner in the grand sort of banqueting hall bit. And I had to go back to the room to go and get something. I kind of felt uneasy about going back to the room, which is not me at all. But I kind of thought, oh, I don't really like going back up there on my own. So got in the lift. I can't remember what floor we were on, but it certainly wasn't the top floor. Hit the button to go up. And I was on my own in the lift, and the lift just kept going and got to the top floor. And then the lift doors just opened. And I remember like seeing there was a long carpet in front of me, like quite bold colored carpet. And right at the very end of the corridor was a mirror. I could just see myself looking at myself in the mirror. I was hitting the button pretty rapidly. I really like not a comfortable feeling. And then the lift went back down to my floor. And I said, I kept saying to my wife, like every night we slept in the room, there was a little gap underneath the door and you could see like a glow of light from outside in the corridor. And pretty much every night I would turn and I think that I could see the silhouette of a pair of feet outside the door and then sort of rub my eyes or look close and get up and see them like step away. And then, yeah, so there was a few instances like that. I mean, I like to run. I do a lot of running. So I'd gone out for a few runs around that area and there was a real feeling of like, you know, being watched when I ran. I mean, I believe there was an old, the Awanche Indians Reservation was there. It's got a real atmosphere there. I mean, I since found out, I mean, as soon as we left, I can't remember, we went off to Carmel after that. And I did a little bit of research and found out that that was the hotel that inspired The Shining. And it's a classic sort of, you know, ghost story, one of the haunted hotels of the world type thing. Doesn't surprise me at all. Had a massive atmosphere there. But yeah, it's a really, like I said, really nice hotel, really beautiful place. But yeah, it's got something in the air, as it were. Yeah, so that's it as far as like ghost stories go and whatever. I've got one more little story for you, Nick. So yeah, last of all, yesterday I was thinking, well, I thought this for a while. I thought, yeah, I bet something happens before I go on the podcast with Nick. You know, and I hadn't thought much more about that. I thought that a few weeks ago. And then yesterday I was listening to a podcast driving on my way home from work. And I was listening to a podcast about how, you know, dead people, you know, give signs to people who are alive about that there's life after death, etc. So yeah, it was quite interesting. I was listening, you know, a little bit half-heartedly, to be honest. And then, you know, I thought, all right, I turned off the podcast and I said out loud to somebody that was very dear to me that is dead. I said, okay, I want you, like a challenge it was almost, I said, I want you to give me a sign that there's life after death, and there is something. And I was thinking in my head, okay, what can the sign be? And a van drove past me, and on the back of the van doors, it said white rabbits. So I said, okay, I want to see, you know, within 24 hours, if I see a white rabbit, you know, that's your sign. So it felt like a little bit of a challenge. Anyway, I forgot that I'd said it, and then, you know, put the radio back on. I pulled into my road and there was one parking space. This is about an hour and a half later. There's one parking space there. So I pulled into the parking space, turned off the car and turned immediately to my left. And in the window of the house was a model of a white rabbit looking out at me. So I thought, okay, that feels like it could be a bit of a sign. So yeah, that's it, Nick. I've probably got other stories, but I can't think of them right now.
Good job, Stephen.
So I hope that's all good for you.
Interesting stuff. So we got three generations of a family all having paranormal experiences.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I'm always interested in, you know, other people's ghost stories or experiences, and over the years you hear a few, but I think when they're firsthand from, you know, family members who, like I say, don't kind of, they got no reason to make anything up, and certainly someone like my dad, who's, you know, quite straight down the line, would never make something up like that. And like I say, it's like with all these things, even like my own sightings, whatever, I've got no qualms telling people about them, because, you know, that they're very real things that happen to me. And people always kind of say, oh yeah, of course. And then they follow it, you know, 5 minutes later with a story that they've got or they've heard. So yeah, no, I always find it interesting hearing other people's stuff.
I'm the same, you know, I can be at a barbecue and there'll be family members there, which obviously know what I do. And then there'll be other guests, and then you get into conversation. And then that's what I'll get the whole time. I'll be at these functions. I'll get people telling me their accounts or their ghost stories or their parents' ghost stories. So
yeah,
everyone has them.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I think certainly as you get older and whatever, you know, I think we'd be really naive not to think there is anything else, especially as we only perceive our own reality through our own senses. So it's like saying, you know, there is only anything that exists is only because we know it exists. But there's, you know, our five senses pick it up. But, you know, a dog can smell, what, 4,000 times more than we can. So they're picking up stuff we can't, you know. So
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much more. And, you know, it's a fascinating subject. And like I say, I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of research. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there seems to be themes going through a lot of the things as well, you know, similar types of experiences or theories on stuff, you know, not that we ever know it all, but I think as long as you're open-minded to it, you know, the experience itself is important, you know. All these things that have happened to me, especially with the orange orbs, they've felt more like a personal sign than anything else, like something that is just like like the white rabbit, you know, it's something that's put in front of you for you to follow, for you to go down rabbit holes and research and read about it. And then once you go down that rabbit hole, there's so much out there, you know, you can never really go back to being shuttered about life after that. You know, there's so much more to it.
And I don't think I'd want to be, you know, I don't think I'd want to go back.
No, 100%. I mean, you know, it's whether you know, you're religious or you have a spiritual belief or you're into UFOs or whatever it is, they're all tied somehow. And there's a lot of common connection. And I think, you know, we're here to learn. We're here to be expansive in our thinking. And to shut that off is just, you know, it's unbearable to think about, really. I think, you know, it's like those people sort of, if you ask, oh, what do you think it's all about, you know, and, oh, I don't know, I don't really care. I think that's more worrying, you know, if you can concern themselves with what I call the admin of life, then, which we all have to do, but, you know, the outside of that, surely you should be thinking about, you know, higher purpose and other stuff.
Of course. I mean, there's two levels of life, isn't there? There's what we're living now. You know, we're going to work every day. We're doing shopping. You know, we're going out watching the football, whatever. And then there's another side to life which runs completely parallel with us, where these things happen. And these things happen to people all over the world, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is fascinating. And, you know, and I've met a lot of people in my lifetime, and like I say, everyone's got a story, everyone's got an interest, and everything, everyone's got something that they have seen or they've heard, and it takes you away from, like you say, we have to eat, we have to drink, we have to go to work, we have to pay the bills, we have to do these things. But outside of that, there's a way to lift ourselves out of that mundane and be able to look at it from outside. And I think that's part of a human condition. And, you know, we need mystery, and we need unanswered questions, because then part of it is our pursuit of that, you know. And I think that's what makes it all really interesting. It'd be a dull world otherwise, wouldn't it?
I agree. It's a bit like when you're a child first watching that magic trick for the first time.
Yeah. And they say, no, I'm not going to tell you how it's done. And then you realize, yeah, of course, never know how it's done, and that's far more interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. And that's mystery, and I find it very exciting that there is something a lot more than what we, you know.
Oh, so much more. I mean, I find it really interesting. I mean, listening, for example, to your podcast, and when you listen to a lot of them, you know, back to back or whatever, you know, I went through a phase, I probably listened to one a day, because obviously, like I told you earlier, being on the road, you can really join the dots on a lot of them. And these are people who obviously don't know each other, but there's common themes about patterns of things that happen, or what they see, or what they felt, or theories behind it, or whatever. And I think that's really important, because it's collating information, you know, and it's hints at something, you know, bigger. I mean, and you've got to think like that. I mean, someone said to me the other day, they said, yeah, how advanced that the human race was. I said, yeah, you know, look, we're still killing each other in mass. We can't share resources properly. We're destroying the planet. Come on, you know, there's got to be more to it than that. So I think, you know, being looking deeper into things is the future, you know. And I genuinely think all these things that happen to people are little clues about it, and hopefully sort of be a cohesive thing for humanity, you know, moving forward.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Little glimpses. See, I look at this show as a bit like an audio version of a crime scene wall, you know, where you have photographs and they have the lines that point to this direction, that point. You know, I think that's the way this show is. There's all these little clues in there. There's always synchronicities and details that they are all connected somehow.
You're absolutely right. There's so many that there's similar types of experiences, and they leave you with similar types of feelings. You know, like I said, that first, you know, 2009 Orange Orbs experience, it felt like a bit of a sign to search, because I did search. You know, I started doing a lot of reading and researching and thinking differently about stuff due to what I had seen. You know, and that can only be a healthy thing, surely. You know. To think more and look deeper, you know, that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, because also you're looking into yourself as well.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, opens up who, you know, what humanity is, what we are, what is the nature of consciousness and et cetera. And like I said, we never know, I don't think, in this lifetime, but I think at least you need to be looking at it. You know, I'm a big fan of people that are searchers. I'm a big George Harrison fan, and he was definitely one of the searchers, you know, and he was someone that thought a lot about these things. And even he said, you know, it felt taboo often to be talking about this stuff. And he was a Beatle, you know, but he had friends that would not want to talk about it.
Yeah, I can speak of from experience, and that's absolutely right. And there's a lot of people which are in a family where they're interested, sometimes obsessed in the subject, and they'll be kind of considered the black sheep because they're a bit odd.
Yeah.
Just because they are more open to things. They're more open to asking questions about stuff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's like that knock on the door will be open. It is like if you are open to stuff, you're far more likely to experience it because you're not looking at your feet, you're looking up. You're taking more of your environment in. So, yeah, I completely agree. But I think, you know, like I said, there's a lot more, you know, there's many more people thinking about this stuff now, I think. And there's a lot of people in the public eye that, you know, I've kind of followed their path to not enlightenment, but certainly people that are thinking a little bit deeper, you know. And we can see it all around us, and I think that is really, really important. Like I say, George Harrison being one, someone like Jim Carrey being another, you know, even people like Russell Brand. They might not be right in everything that they're saying, but at least they're searching, you know.
At least they're asking questions.
Exactly.
And you're right, a lot of people are starting to become a bit more open. They're starting to travel different routes. You know, I always say to people, you know, it's always a good thing to go outside, get away from that junk that's on TV, you know, look up, meditate, and, you know, get your body and your mind together. You know, I'm not going down that hippie route or anything. I'm just saying.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I use a lot of breathing technique and I use meditation. And it's just, you know, it's nothing more than centering your brain, you know, and being aware of yourself. It's a really, really healthy thing to do, you know, and people are suddenly realizing that. You see the growth of people like Wim Hof, you know, the Wim Hof method and things like that, cold exposure, getting back to nature, because we're realizing the system is a bit dysfunctional, a bit, you know, massively dysfunctional. We're pursuing the capitalist values and things that really don't, it's not healthy for the human race in the long run. And I think lockdown really highlighted that. People really had a chance to pause and see really what stuff was about. And it's no coincidence after lockdown, people started not wanting to go back to particular jobs, or they started to pursue creative activities, reading more, being more artistic, playing the guitar, painting a picture, you know, seeing nature come back, no aircraft in the sky, you know, more wildlife in the streets, that type of thing. And I think that, you know, was a healthy thing in a lot of ways, although it soon gets forgotten pretty sharpish when everything goes back to normal.
And there's a lot of listeners out there which be able to connect to what you just said there, because they've done the same. They've taken up hobbies or talents that they've had but never really used before, and during that time they're able to do that kind of stuff. People appreciated their time at home a lot more. Obviously there's different ends to that.
I mean, I think it's the pursuit of, you know, of following stuff, and maybe they, you know, it's a time of reflection, which is meditation really, you know, that is a time of reflection and looking at stuff. And I think people in lockdown had suddenly sat there and gone, do you know what, I don't really like getting the train at six every morning, going sitting in that office and doing that particular job, and I'm not just going to give up that dream that I was going to do something else, perhaps I will pursue it. And I just hope people came out of lockdown and, you know, and did follow those things. But I think it was a good time of reflection. I mean, I'm pretty sure there must have been a lot more UFO sightings during that period, mainly because people at home, you know. I don't know if that's true, but yeah, it seems that it would be an ideal time for, you know, people to experience more and more stuff, because they're more open to it, you know, because it's suddenly your reality changes. You've gone from going 9 to 5 and doing this routine, suddenly like, oh, hold on, this is a bit of a sort of apocalyptic scenario here. How far will it go? And you really got to start to question yourself and society when it goes down that route. Yeah, I'd like to say I wrote the book that I was meant to be writing in lockdown, but I didn't. Although I did do a garden design course, so there we go.
And something you were doing before?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I've always been interested in design and gardens and planting and whatever. And I just did that during lockdown. I was actually going up to London, you know, to do the course. It was a bit uncomfortable wearing a mask and social distancing in the classroom and stuff. But it's been really interesting, you know. And I think that's it. You know, it gave me that impetus to kind of do different things. And I hope that's the same with everyone else, you know, just follow dreams that you have.
That's super important, yeah. You do something you enjoy doing.
Completely. And if you enjoy it, you'll do it well, that's for sure. You'll give it your best.
If you want to work outside, if you enjoy being out in nature, go work outside, become a gardener, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to work with animals, the same. You know, do something that you enjoy. That's going to benefit you as well as others.
Yeah, exactly. And your true calling then, if it's something you really enjoy, you'll put a lot into it, and you know, people will buy into it as well. And you know, if someone's really keen and they're talking enthusiastically about it, you get encouraged, you want to buy into that idea. And I think, you know, that's really important for everyone.
Stephen, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. It's been a pleasure, and it's been great. Good experience. Thanks so much.
You're more than welcome. Take care.
Take care, Nick.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description, or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Miriam, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Nick. So great to talk to you finally.
It's wonderful having you on, and thank you for gracing us today. And you're calling from New York City.
New York City, the Big Apple. It was a baked apple before, but now it's okay.
Everyone's taking a bite. Okay, Miriam, you have a UFO sighting to share with us from the 1990s. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about this call. I mean, I have never really talked much about this before. You know, when it first happened, I talked about it to some friends, and that really was about the end of it. Up until recently, I haven't felt comfortable because of the stigma attached with people who see anything that, you know, it's considered paranormal or out of the ordinary. And UFO in particular, even though I have friends who, in the past, I've had a few friends tell me that they've seen something. But like me, nobody will talk about it, you know, until recently that finally the government is finally admitting, yeah, these things are real. And so people are feeling more comfortable, I think. I know I am.
Yeah, they are indeed.
Yeah.
And you've come to the right place. You know, everyone that listens to this show are very like-minded and just want to hear other people's accounts and as well as share their own.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I've been listening. It's amazing. I think to me what was really surprising in listening to these stories is some of the similarities between what I saw and what other people saw that kind of confirmed, you know, the reality of what we saw. It's one thing if you see something and nobody else has ever seen it, but when someone can say, oh, I saw something just like that, and it makes a big difference.
Exactly, yeah, you know? And especially the area where you saw it and the time frame you saw it.
Amazing, New York City. And no one has, to this day, no one has talked about it that I'm aware. There's been no reports. I looked in the papers. I, you know, for days afterwards, I searched the news, and somebody has to have, you know, to want to say something. But then I didn't. So my thing is, if I didn't want to say anything, and maybe everybody else who saw it felt the same way.
Yeah, you are probably right. And of course, you know, that area of Manhattan, you know, it's all pretty well built up, isn't it? So unless, I guess, you're really looking up that way.
Well, yeah, but see, here's the thing. When this happened, we were literally stuck in traffic on 9th Avenue. It was rush hour. I did homeless outreach. So we were in a van. My partner was driving. And we were stuck. We were on our dinner break because I was working the 2 p.m. to 10 shift at the time. So we were taking, it was probably around 7 o'clock. And it was light because it was summer. It was still light out. And so we're stuck in traffic heading towards the Lincoln Tunnel. Now, the way New York City is built, it's a grid. So avenues run south and north and streets run east to west. So we're going south on 9th Avenue, going downtown. We're on 54th Street. So we're stuck in traffic. And my partner and I simultaneously noticed this bright light right down. So we're looking downtown, and where the light was, I would estimate that to be about 2.5 miles away from us. But it was so bright. This light was so bright. And it's bouncing around the sky. It's like bouncing, literally zigzagging around the sky. Then it would stop dead. And then it would like change direction. And so my partner was a Vietnam vet. So he's seen, imagine, you know, he's familiar with aircraft. I'm not, but at the same time, I know that was not anything that I felt that those kinds of maneuvers were not something that our aircraft that we have, that we're aware of, are capable of performing those maneuvers. So we're looking at each other and we're saying, what is that? You know, what could that be? And we're just looking. And not too long after we first noticed it, we realized it was changed direction, and it was coming, heading our way. And honestly, to this day, I cannot tell you how long it took it just didn't seem like it took very long. But at the same time, when it came over us, it was moving relatively slowly. It was like gliding. So I don't know how it made it from downtown to where we were. Now, meanwhile, we're still stuck. We're barely moving. Lights aren't changing. People are like, just, you know, we're stuck here. And it's suddenly, we see the light coming closer. And I swear, it was the most awe. I mean, we were just in awe. You know, we couldn't even say anything. We just both looked at each other, and then we stuck our heads out the window almost simultaneously because we just needed to see what this thing was. It's just flying over us, and it's this huge triangle and so many lights underneath. This is what I have not heard a description of one like this before. It had lights in the shape of a V in three rows, and then in the center was a huge white light. Now, when I say white and bright light, they did not give a glare. They were just like bright, but yet they were, don't know what the word would be, but they weren't giving what you would expect to see as a glare, like when you see those bright lights and when they're filming. They do a lot of filming in New York City on the streets, and they sometimes at night, and you see the bright lights that they use. This was not that. So it's got all these lights underneath, a huge round light in the middle. So how big is this thing? I've tried to draw it and I can't do it because I can never get it right in terms of like all those rows of lights with this one in the middle. It has to be really big. And it flew right over us. It went right over us. And I looked next to me because I had my head out the window, is a Jeep, a red Jeep. And there's this woman, and she is like hysterical. She was like laughing, and I felt like she was like close to hysteria, but controlled hysteria. And we just looked at each other, and then we just kept looking at this thing as it went by. It's just incredible. And so the feeling was like awe, like, what did we just see? You know? So my partner and I looked at each other, and what was that? I don't know. No idea. You know, we it was like you're awestruck. And this is another thing that has made me feel, I found very interesting when other people talk about it and they say the same thing, that they were almost like unable to talk about it afterwards. You know, for years, I said this is the same way we felt. I did talk to some friends about it after work. I always would go downtown, even though it was late. We'd meet at this cafe and, you know, have a late dinner. And I told them about it. I told our supervisor, who laughed and said, oh, it was probably like a big, what did he call it, a kite or a helicopter or something. You know, Andrew, you got to be kidding me. You had to have seen this thing. But he was a very kind of pragmatic guy, you know. And he would never have, he just couldn't imagine such a thing. What you saw was, I'm sure it was some kind of rational explanation for it, you know. But no, it was just an incredible thing. And it left us unable to, almost like you're stuck dumb, is the only way I can describe it. You're in awe, and then you're like, you tell your friends, and then you kind of think about it, you know. You just, where do you go with it? Who do you call? I'm like, you know, do I call the newspapers? Do I call the police? No, I don't know. I didn't do any of that. And neither did anyone else, apparently. And this was in 1997, by the way, summer of 1997. Yeah, so it wasn't until a few years later, I listened to Art Bell, Coast to Coast, good show. And in fact, I'm the person who always wanted to see a UFO because I was like, you know, I would hear about it. And I heard a couple of friends, as I told you, say that they had seen something. One was on Pennsylvania in a rural street in Pennsylvania. And she said people got out of the cars and they saw the thing. And I was so envious. I'm like, wow, I've never seen that. And another friend, after I told her, told me that she had seen something like this in New York, and this was on the East Side, and the people came out, literally came out of the stores to look. And again, no one ever reported that. And this is New York City. And so what flew over us that day, I know a lot of people have seen it, because not only did it come over us, the area where we had first seen it flying way in the distance, and it was like doing all these maneuvers, that's like the Wall Street area. So it's way downtown. It's over, you know, New York Harbor and the Wall Street district and Battery Park. So there's a lot of people down there. How could no one have seen that? Impossible.
Yeah, there would have been lots of witnesses.
There has to be. But this is a part that just drives me crazy. You know, all these years later, why did no one say anything? But then again, I keep going back to, did I say anything? Did I call anyone? No. It's almost like you're, and I don't know if it's a function of the UFO itself that it does this to people, that it makes you kind of say, I'm not going to talk about it. I can't talk about it. So I don't know. Sometimes I think that that's a function. I mean, I don't want to get too paranormal and sound too, you know, but are they somehow, whoever, whatever that is, able to impart this kind of telepathic message to people to not really talk about it? I don't know.
So your sighting was in early summer of 1997.
97, yep.
And of course you had the famous Phoenix Lights of March of 1997.
Yeah, I didn't hear about that till after my signing. I don't think I knew that had happened in 1997. Yeah. But, you know, as you have mentioned on your show, other people have mentioned that apparently New York is very active, but usually they say the Hudson Valley, upstate, city itself, you just don't hear it. And again, why has no one ever said anything? It's a conundrum. I can't figure it out.
I mean, it could be, I mean, I do get reports from New York City. I've had a few. It could be just due to the skyscrapers, you know, and everyone's so busy and they're trying to watch where they're going down the sidewalk. So that could be a lot of it. And also bearing in mind, one of the famous sightings was John Lennon, of course, because he saw the UFOs over New York.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's in one of his songs.
Oh, I'm a fan, but I did not know that.
It was Nobody Told Me.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna listen to it. I'm listening to it today.
Yeah, Nobody Told Me. And he did sketches of what he saw as well.
Do you know when that happened?
Okay, so this was 1974.
Wow.
And it was East Side, New York.
Yeah, well, like I said, my friend told me that they saw something on the East Side. It was, I think, Madison Avenue. It was one of the busier. It wasn't Fifth. It was probably Madison or Lexington. She said people came out of the stores, literally, because obviously it was visible long enough for people to tell others and come out. And yet, no one has ever said anything. You know, same with my sighting. And because we were stuck in traffic, I have to believe that other people, the woman in the car next to me, the one in the Jeep, definitely, I mean, she just jumped up. I mean, she was literally standing up. They had the top down. And she literally stood up and she was like I said, between hysteria and controlled hysteria and laughter. We looked and, you know, we didn't say anything to each other either. I mean, afterwards, you know, so Perry and I just looked at each other and what was it? You know, I've never seen anything like it. I never had either. So I had heard about triangles. So I, you know, I knew what I had seen in that sense. But other than that, I didn't expect the feeling of being dumbstruck that came with it, with that signing.
it really isn't uncommon for there to be a sighting and only one person really reports it. Everyone else that seems to view it, and it quite commonly it happens, seems to happen on roadways where there's like a traffic jam or a standstill on the freeway, and an object will be viewed by multiple people. Many people will see this object, but only one person would report it. So, and that could be because, you know, like you said, don't know where to report it, or you don't think it's a good idea to report it because people will think you're crazy.
That's it. Yeah, people, you know, at the time, I mean, it's bad enough today, but in 97, for you to call up and say whatever I saw this thing, no, people weren't going to stick their necks out. They just weren't going to do it. But regardless, even I think that the temptation to even do it was tampered by this feeling that you just couldn't even talk about it, that you were left just dumbstruck. You know, I tried to draw it for my friends. We laughed because, like, you know, we're sitting at the table in the cafe, and I say, well, let me try and draw this thing, and it just came out looking like pizza, you know, because it was a round light to like pepperoni, and it's a triangle. It looked like a pizza. Like, no, that's not what I saw. I can't do it.
We might try and get you to draw it again, though, just to give it a go. I mean, I'm terrible at drawing and sketching. If you can try and get the best you think you can, if it looks like a pizza, don't worry. At least we know the kind of idea. And even if it's just the placement of the lights.
Yes.
Just remember detail like that. But don't worry if it looks like a flying pizza. I mean, it's New York City. I mean, it was invented there.
Yeah. The lights were like the interesting thing for me, because nothing that I had ever heard of when people spoke about these triangles had lights like this. Literally three rows of lights in the shape of a triangle on either side. And then in the middle, that huge white light. And they were all white, no color. And what we could see between those lights of the triangle was like a gray, dark gray metal kind of, you know, matte metal, gray, dark gray. It wasn't black, but so many lights that I've never heard of anyone ever seeing one like that. I'm aware. I don't know, maybe someone has. And certainly a lot of people saw it that day. They're not talking about it, but, you know, all of the descriptions always say they have lights on the corners or one light in the middle and, like, you know, light here and there. But this was row after row, three rows in that shape, which is why I have to feel that it was really big, because how do you have that many rows of light? When I try to draw it, I have to make the damn thing really big. It won't work otherwise.
It might be worth just putting black triangle UFO into Google. There are many depictions on there that might resemble what you did see.
Yeah, I found one that resembled it, but for the light. It had the white light in the middle, and it had other lights, but not like what I saw, not like what we saw. You know, I need to call Perry because I haven't talked to him. I left my job in 2008. I have not been in touch with him since then. So I don't know if he still thinks about it, you know?
And he was the only other one in the van with you?
With me, yeah, in the van, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you know, we had my supervisor who I absolutely love, but Andrew's like so pragmatic and so rigid. He just looked at us and, no, that didn't happen. Whatever you saw, there's a helicopter. Didn't make any sound. It was totally silent. Totally silent. And it just went right over us and kept going north. It just kept going. And it was like, literally like it was blinding. But yet, how did it get from way downtown? 2 or 3 miles. I don't know how fast it came. But it seemed to me that from the moment we saw that it was heading in our direction, it didn't take that long for to suddenly appear, and there it was.
There was also a black triangle sighting in Brooklyn. That was November of 2003. Flew over from Staten Island.
Okay, yeah. I live in Brooklyn. I was born and raised on the west side of Manhattan. Excuse me, on the upper west side. But I lived in Brooklyn for about 8 years. Williamsburg. And then I moved back to Manhattan, downtown by where we first saw it, down by the seaport near Wall Street. I lived down there. And now I'm back uptown. So at the time we saw this, I had moved back uptown. So that's where how I knew very well the area where we first saw it. It's very busy, you know, but it's 7 o'clock. People are going home. Like you say, they're not looking up. They're walking and or driving. And New Yorkers don't look up at the sky a whole lot during the day. I mean, there are tall buildings down there, but it's near the water. And a lot of the buildings, and you know, it's old buildings, it's Wall Street, Trinity, all these old, there's a lot of old buildings down there, so they're not skyscrapers. But there are skyscrapers, but not all of them are. So you have a pretty good view of the sky down there, but no one looks up, you know, not during the day. You're coming home tired. So I can kind of understand maybe not that many people looking up down there, but the people that were stuck in traffic with me, they had to have seen it. They had to.
And they're out there somewhere.
They're out there.
Still retelling their story to their kids and grandkids, but never reported it.
Yeah. Like I said, the thing is that you feel a stigma in talking about it. Honestly, other than my friends, who I was totally comfortable telling that day, I really didn't tell anybody much, you know. And once it was over, and you think about it and you wonder, but you don't talk about it. I just never really talked about it much until now. But and seeing that, like I said, the government has finally decided that they're going to come clean on what pilots have seen and what, you know, military has seen, made me feel more comfortable talking about it. And people aren't going to look at me and say, "Oh, he's out of her mind." But still, I think there's stigma, because I know that even if I, like a couple of times I posted about it on my Twitter, like people don't comment. I mean, and that's amazing to me. It's like, why aren't people asking about this? This is like such a strange story, you know? People don't want to touch it. They really don't. And that's kind of sad.
It is. But then again, with Twitter, Twitter's just a lot of people shouting and no one's listening. That's the way I see Twitter.
That's true.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
What I mentioned it on Facebook to a couple of friends, and I do have one friend who's very interested, a friend in Texas, and he and I have talked about it a lot. He's very interested. In fact, I turned him on to your podcast, and he loves it. He's so happy.
I'm glad.
But so, yeah, I'm trying to pass the word around to people who I know would be interested. And so he and I have talked about it, but other than that, other people don't comment much. And yet, you know, I'll post some silly thing and everybody will jump in, you know. I just think people don't want to go there still. They're kind of skittish about it, you know.
Yeah, they still are. I mean, people are starting to come around a bit, and people that weren't particularly interested in the subject before are getting slowly into it a bit more now. You couldn't go down the road and start a conversation with a stranger about UFOs. Now, you probably couldn't. People would be like, okay, that's interesting. Because obviously since the government has started to come out and say stuff, they obviously haven't released too much information, but they've suggested definitely a possibility, which we all knew in any case. We don't particularly need them telling us this. So, you know, people's ears are starting to perk up a little bit, and people are starting to take note a little bit more than they used to.
Definitely, definitely. But again, more but cautious. I think people are cautious. They'll say, oh, well, that's interesting or whatever. But again, I don't know why I felt like I couldn't really talk about it for so long, aside from the stigma, also that feeling of just, but that lasted years, the feeling of awe and not being able to talk about it freely. But now it's a little different. It's better. And I did report it to MUFON about 3 years later. And for a while, I saw it on the web, on their database. But I looked recently and I couldn't find it. But now it seems you have to pay. You have to become a member to be able to search the database.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I couldn't see it.
There's also the National Reporting Center as well, which is free to go and have a look at their archived reports. Yeah, that's the only downside with MUFON, that is.
Well, I would be interested to see if it's still on the MUFON database, because like I said, it was there for a while when I first reported it. But it should be more, it should be a national database that everybody can access, you know? It's kind of frustrating.
I agree.
You know, I mean, I only heard and did it because of Coast to Coast, who he used to talk about MUFON. So I finally said, you know, I should really at least get this on record somewhere. You know, even though, like I said, I really kicked myself for not having called somebody here in New York. Again, who the police? No, I don't know. But maybe airport, I mean, someone who would have access to keep track of what flies, whatever it takes up airspace in the city. Somebody, right? So I felt like I wish I had done more to contact someone. It's kind of a missed opportunity.
Well, I mean, it was the 90s. You know, it's different these days where we carry these phones with us. And these phones, they have, you know, you can download apps now which tells you exactly what's in the sky with the flight radar and stuff. But we didn't have those things in you know, in the 90s. And if someone didn't know where they could report it or who they could tell, sometimes they'd tell the police, and the police don't really do much about it in any case, if they even respond to it.
Yeah, the police would just laugh at you, especially New York police.
they'll probably give you a breathalyzer first.
But, you know, because of the area, because of all the traffic, I have to think that maybe there was a police car stuck in that traffic, or someone who's a patrol officer off duty driving. There have to be some people that saw it. There's just too many people. There's too many people. Traffic on 9th Avenue, huge. I was around 54th Street, and traffic was going all the way downtown, so, you know, like at least a few miles down worth of traffic. So
any listeners out there that were on 9th Avenue in summertime of 1997 and think you may have seen something similar to what Miriam saw, get in contact.
That would be so amazing. Especially that woman in the red Jeep. I would love if she ever heard. You know, I wish that I had said something to her, but again, we were just speechless, really. We just couldn't grasp what we were seeing. And again, here I am, having listened to Art Bell, having listened to Coast to Coast, knowing about, hearing about these things, wishing that one day I would see one. And when you do, you're like, oh my God, what did I just see? What just happened? And you're struck dumb. It's just amazing.
You're all struck, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm struck.
Has that been the only thing you've seen before or since?
That was, well, there was one which actually I had totally forgotten about. And this was a few years later, well, quite a few years later. But it was something that was so abstract. I did report that one right away because by then I knew better. Coming up from Washington, D.C., I had gone, in fact, I had gone down there for a NASA social that they had, the astronauts and stuff. And I was coming home and I had taken the bus down from New York. And I was at the window and I saw this thing, which at first I thought was a plane with a contrail. But the contrail part was following it, literally, right behind it. So it wasn't leaving a contrail. It was like some kind of thing behind it. You know, when a plane leaves a contrail, it's there. It's like this long long, smoky kind of thing that it leaves in the sky. But it wasn't doing that. This thing was following it. So, you know, the woman that was sitting next to me looked up, and I took out my camera. I took a picture, but I couldn't get anything good. It was too far away. And I wondered what it was. It wasn't doing anything strange, but it looked strange. So that was really about it. I mean, that one I reported just because I wondered if they could get their hands on some kind of radar information. It was in 2009, so it was, you know, by then I had more awareness, had a computer, so on and so on. So I did report it, and I don't know what came of that. I don't know. That one was, it was, again, very bright, and it was moving in a straight line, but it was very strange. But that was about it. Never saw anything else since then. I wish I would. I would love to see that. I would love to see that triangle again. I would, you know. It's like, and here I am. I mean, I spent time in the Caribbean, spent time, you know, lots of places where there's lots of sky, and always wondered, oh, I wish I would see something. And never did. And then here you are in the middle of New York City, you know, stuck in traffic, and you see it. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, that image will always stay with you now.
No, definitely. Yeah.
That's wonderful, Miriam.
Well, thank you. I guess not having talked about it a whole lot, I'm kind of nervous, but it feels good to, you know, tell someone who is willing to listen and understands and has heard from other people who have similar experiences. Really makes a difference.
Of course it does. And now you've told hundreds of thousands of people all over the world now. And hopefully, you know, hopefully there'll be others out there from New York, you know, that would have been there and seen the same thing, and hopefully they're getting contact. It does happen. Fingers crossed. You never know. What was your friend's name in Texas?
Your friend in Texas? Jimmy.
A quick shout out to Jimmy. How you doing, Jimmy? Howdy.
I love it. He was so thankful. I mean, he's like, oh my God, thank you for turning me on to this. You know, really, really love the show.
Good stuff. Okay. Miriam, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Oh, and I so appreciate you. I really do. I appreciate everything you do, and I love your show, and I wish you so much luck. And, you know, I know that, you know, for the time being, you want to keep it, you know, keep it small the way you're doing it. I think it's great, but I wish you much, much, much success.
Thank you, Miriam. It's been lovely talking to you, okay? You take care of yourself.
Okay.
I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. That's all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you've had an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Stephen and Miriam for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.